Well, this is not Take a Break with Gene and Mary, and it's not supposed to be this way, but we'll do this.
Be Unique Radio brings you unscripted conversations with world changers and difference makers Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on all your favorite platforms. Visit BeUnique.org to learn who is scheduled next and how you can talk with our guests and become part of the show. That's BeUnique.org. See you there.
Well, we are here. Hi, Gene.
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? It sounds like we might be having some production issues.
Oh, well, a little bit. I forgot to check and make sure.
Well, I take full responsibility.
Oh, well, you should. It's your fault.
I will.
It's all your fault.
I will.
It's always your fault.
I will. It doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter.
No, it's good. We were supposed to have a guest tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I sent the message to somebody's landline.
Oh, no.
All right, well, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try somebody who – I'm going to try Pup. Hold on a minute.
Okay.
I can't type and talk at the same time.
Well, I want to tell you that something that strikes me is that for having people, guests from all over the world, actually we do a pretty good job for being able to connect at this one point in time every
yeah.
week.
Yeah, well,
you know, the record's
our
pretty
guests,
good.
We've been talking with our guests. Jennifer and Lynn and I have been talking with Carl McCullough for quite a long time. And
uh-huh.
Anita Full from Green Gables is the one who recommended that he reach out to us. And he wanted us to come to Oklahoma and do a documentary about this college basketball coach. But he isn't here. He hasn't called in. I've reached out to him as many ways as I know how. And, you know, kind of like knocking on the door, Carl, are you there?
Sure, sure.
oh, this girl. I think we're going to get Pup Duffy in here. Keep talking,
okay.
Gene. I'm going to text her.
All right. Well, you know, I'm sure whatever happened, we'll figure it out, and it'll be fine. And this is something we were just talking about, too, is being able to have a bullpen, maybe have a list of people that would be willing to come in at the last minute as a, you know, setup. To know they would be asked to if we accidentally didn't have a guest able to come in. So that'll be kind of fun.
Yeah, and we do have a few people, but I don't have them specified. Yeah, there are several people who have said, oh, I'll be your guest anytime you need me. And
sure.
I forget to put them in a list. And that's just like with our people who say, I'd be happy to read your audio magazine, I'll read your articles for you. Great. Well, I don't know who you are. And so I forget when I need somebody. Okay, so we have a guest coming in. I'm excited. She was so funny. She said, oh, my God, for which show? I'm not even wearing a bra. I told her no clothing necessary. It's not that kind of show, folks. But Gwen Fasnacht. I'm going to butcher her name. She's one of our, she started out as an intern, and now she's way more than that. So she does the Coffee, Candy, or Creative show. And I think she'd be a lot of fun to talk to because she has talked to some really amazing people over the last couple of months.
Excellent, yeah.
I'm sorry, Carl, you missed out. I mean, he wanted to be on the show about 6 months ago. We didn't have room, so we booked him as quickly as possible. And now we won't be able to book him again until, sometime in 2022.
Yeah.
But I will say this. Carl he likes to tell us that all of the guys that he wrote about in his story, Sid and the boys, were they're already senior citizens. So he is, I'm not sure how old he is. He's raising his grandson, and he's a, I thought he'd be a great guest on the show, and he would be, but we just don't have him here, so we'll have to talk. We're going to be talking to Pup Duffy. Woof, woof.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to talk with Gwen yet, actually.
Yeah, you're going to love her. I do, anyway.
Yeah.
I think she's just...
Well, the show would be great.
Just call. She's... Hold on.
Oh.
You keep talking, Gene. Keep the air from going dead.
Okay. Okay, I'm in dead air here. Well, you know, sometimes it can be hard if you don't know what you're doing when you call in. If you're going to be on the show, it's different because you can just call and listen. As a matter of fact, if you just call the number, 516-418-5651. The number is 516-418-5651. Give us a call. Join the conversation. Definitely. I know it sounds like Gwen will be coming in. And
yeah. She wants to know which personality she's supposed to be. I get that. I'll fill the air for a minute. You know, when we first started Be Unique, we wrote our first magazine. And, in fact, June is going to be the anniversary of our first issue.
Nice.
But we wrote 20 pages, and Anna wrote an article. I wrote everything else. I think maybe Lynn wrote a button list that I turned into something. However, mm-hmm. anyway, the point is I know that. I'm going to tell her to come as Pup.
Pup.
Yeah. We'll oh, there she is. There she is. I'm about to strangulate her. Girl, you're saving my day, but I'm going to strangulate you.
Well,
which
you
got to
find me first.
I have bones. I know how to find my Pup Duffy. Pup Duffy in the house.
Woo-hoo!
but I do want Gene to meet Gwen, too. Folks, we're not having split personalities, but yes, we are. I was telling Gene how when we first started Be Unique, I wrote all the articles, and we just put Be Unique staff, and we had complaints about that. They want to know who wrote the articles.
Oh,
so,
no.
Because I wrote them all, I didn't want it to be the Mary show. So, although now I have no problem with that. But I created personas as I went along, and I ended up with six, mm-hmm. well, actually, including
really?
Myself, seven distinct personalities I created.
Right.
Them. They all had an author's bio. They had a backstory. They all have Facebook and Instagram pages are total. Oh, yeah. For a while, I wasn't really sure who I was, and then I found some guy was flirting with me. I'm like, is he flirting with me, or is he flirting with my personality? Or my character? I don't know! I got to shut this down! So,
well, I
so
would say
how
this.
About...
Gwen is an amazing assistant to Pup, to me. She is fantastic.
Ooh.
She takes care of everything. She talks to all
No wonder
of us.
Gwen hasn't been pulling her weight for Mary.
Listen, I've been keeping her very busy, and I apologize for that. But she told me earlier that she is going to be killing it as soon as the kiddo goes to bed. So
awesome. Yeah, Gwen is actually my personal assistant, the executive assistant to the president of the organization, and she has been a lifesaver.
And editor-in-chief.
Yes.
Is that right?
She has been a lifesaver on numerous occasions. And if only because I just pass off the emails I don't want to read and I say, here, handle this. And I don't know what she does with them. I have no idea. She might just discard them all. I don't have the courage to do that, but I just pass them off to Gwen. Gwen files them forwards them, manages them, whatever. But Gwen is responsible for our product reviews, our book reviews, our unscripted show, booking guests and confirming them.
Yeah.
And we're booked through
March.
Because if Carl wants to come back and be on the show another night, he's going to have to wait till January of 2022.
Right. And which Carl was this?
Carl McCullough. He wrote book Sid and the Boys.
Okay.
Pup Duffy. Oh, my gosh. Pup Duffy has... Why don't you introduce yourself, Pup?
Well, I am Pup, and I am the host of Coffee, Candy, and Creative, and I am also Mary's best friend. Sorry, Jean, to let you know,
actually,
in this way. But,
actually, she's not my best friend. She's my daughter.
Oh.
She's my star daughter. She calls me all kinds of wonderful astrological names like Mother Goddess and Mother May
Goddess.
I don't even know what she calls me. But she's like
right.
a girl I never had.
Well, you know, and it was a match made in the celestial heavens. It was meant to be.
I'm still waiting for the day we actually meet in person.
Well, I discussed it with my terrestrial mother, and I decided that you and I and she need to have a ladies' lunch, and we need to brainstorm some of these crafty Etsy ideas.
My creative circle next time.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, my creative circle has been kind of square lately. This past month, we had two women show up to help, and we created way more ethereal type things than physical things. We created nothing physically, nothing we could sell. However, we did some brainstorming. We came up with a great list of ideas of what to do with all of these donations we've been receiving. And the one lady who's new to the group got real antsy, and she said, I don't know what to do. I'm supposed to be here helping, and I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting around talking. I said, you are helping because we're doing creative stuff in our heads. Well, I need to be busy with my hands. I said, do you want to go pull some weeds? She declined that offer. And Jean had an idea. What was your idea about our next creative circle, Jean?
Well, I just thought it'd be kind of fun to have the next creative circle in your garden. You have such a big garden, and there's a lot to do because it's going to start raining in the next few weeks. And
I'm growing some great weeds.
Yeah.
I would love that. I would love to get everybody out there, get them dirty and plant stuff. I would be willing to go and buy potted plants so that we have something physical right then to watch bloom, you know?
Sure. Let's do it.
If everybody's down for that, I am definitely down for that.
Are we pulling weeds? Is that what just happened?
We're not growing weed. We're pulling weeds.
I'm not sure which weekend that is, but I'm going to be busy.
It's not a weekend. It's always the third Monday of the month. And yeah, I get what you're saying. But you know, there's something very relaxing and calming about pulling weeds.
Unless you're
already mad, and then there's something very cathartic about it because you can throw those weeds and pretend like it's somebody's face.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You have no idea how many murders I've plotted in my garden.
Oh, well, yep.
Or how many have happened out there.
I can't go to jail again.
I always tell people I don't have enough money for that. I can't afford it.
I'm too pretty for jail.
You are. And
but
I guarantee you they won't let you do the things that you like to do. So I want to know, how did Pup Duffy come into being?
Well, I've always been creative. I've always had that vivid imagination. And I love to talk, obviously. I was given this opportunity by Miss Mary to talk to some of the people that didn't quite fit the persona of the other shows, that were a little more eclectic, a little more along the creative path. And I just got kind of lucky that people replied to emails and were wanting to talk to me too. And I've gotten to talk to some really interesting people, and I've learned so much. I mean, I learned about stamps tonight, for crying out loud. And in conjunction with that, I learned about stamp collecting and the worth of stamps, but I also learned about the worth of morals and human, you know, human choices and moral choices and what things can contribute to you making the right decision in a situation. So going in to talk to a director and a producer, but actually coming out with a life lesson was pretty sweet, you know? And it's just been a hell of a ride. If I can say hell on your show, I apologize. But
oh, did she say a word that we don't say? I don't think so. I think we used that word before.
The hell if I know.
Now, Gina and I had a whole conversation about that one time. It was kind of funny. We try to abstain from the F word, you know, like fixing and flushing and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
You know what bothers me more than the actual F word? People that say friggin'. Like, friggin' to me is more offensive than the F word for some reason.
Really?
I don't know why. Yeah.
Interesting.
Isn't that
interesting?
Well, now, correct me if I'm – no, you know, you're a Battlestar Galactica fan, right?
A bit. I wasn't.
Well, they say frack.
Yeah, right. And on Farscape, they would say – I think it was Farscape. They would say Frel.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but
Curtis and I were talking about this the other day. The one that just blows my mind every time I hear it was a lethal. Was it Lethal Weapon? Yeah, I think. Yeah, I have to stop and think who was in it. A Lethal Weapon. I don't remember which one of the many Lethal Weapons they had.
Hmm.
They had a melon farmer.
Hmm.
Instead of the mother, they had a melon farmer. I've never heard it since then, but it was hilarious.
That's good.
You little melon.
Yeah.
Well, I've been trying, I think we talked about this before, I've already been trying to clean up my language because I wanted to do streaming with the gaming, and I know that kids will watch it. You know, we'll watch those videos. So I've already tried changing some of the words. Like I'll say biscuit or son of a biscuit and blisters. I don't know why. I said biscuit blisters the other day, and I said, what the heck?
Biscuit what?
Biscuit blisters. I don't know.
Well, Curtis the other day came to me, and what did he say? Jesus ate Christmas or something like that. I said, where did that come from? He says, well, better than Jesus H. Christ. That's what everybody else says. I'm not everybody else. Okay, then.
I know. I try so hard not to because we grew up Baptist, so that was like a major no-no. But I'll say, Jesus, help me. Which is still, to me, a curse, but it sounds like I'm praying, too. So.
It cancels out each other.
Yeah, right? So
I say, good. Jesus, help me all the time because I am definitely praying because I need lots of help. lots of help.
Well, I think one of my favorites is when I always heard growing up is that somebody that didn't know anything. They didn't know it from Shinola, you know, shit from Shinola.
Okay.
And so, you know, sometimes when I feel like saying it, but I don't want to say it, I'll use Shinola instead. Like, I don't know the difference. But
right.
I know the difference. That's a fun one.
Did Gene say shit on the radio?
Oh,
hell if I know.
No, it was a...
We had an author on here one time, and we asked her, you know, she said that she writes steamy romances. And I said, well then maybe I should change the rating to PG or R. She said at least PG-13. I don't remember her saying anything at all steamy. She didn't read a passage from her book. So I don't know. It was strange.
It's not a very good recommendation for the book if her conversation wasn't steamy. It's like, oh, it's gonna be bad. Are they gonna hold hands and look into each other's eyes? I mean, God.
I think.
Well, now you know, if you think about it, in some relationships that could be steamy.
That's true. Show a little bit of ankle. You know.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
In my case, it's probably a cankle.
Cankle.
Jean is over there blushing. I can feel it from here.
Stop looking
oh,
at
my
her
goodness.
Cankle.
Oh, my God.
She's a married lady. How dare you, sir?
I know. I just do that naturally, though, all the time. I can't help it.
Well, I tell you what. I mean, we're talking about getting a glimpse of the ankle or the cankle, and two of my best friends were in a group text message. I had to mute them because they were one of them's talking about some sort of martial art that's like BJJ, and I tuned in and I said, wait, what? What are we talking about? So now it just, we're degenerates because it's just gone downhill. But romance novels, I can remember, if we're going to go a little bit far back, I must have been probably 13 or 14, and I remember my aunt gave me one, and it was a straight-up bodice ripper. And so I was obsessed with them for a good probably 4 years. And then my high school boyfriend's mom was reading this book you may have heard of called It. And
it's about the crown, right?
Oh, yeah. And so I turned into this massive horror and science fiction fan. And it has to have a really riveting story. I'm not going to just pick up a Danielle Steele, no offense to Danielle Steele, or something, or a Nicholas, whatever his name is.
What about an E.L. James?
No.
Let me tell you. Yeah. I have to, listen. I'm such a literary snob.
Mm-hmm.
When I moved back to South Carolina to take care of my mom back in 2011, and the 50 Shades was all the rage back then. I had heard about it. I don't know what it was. I just kind of like opened up the book one day and I'm like, nope, not interested. Now, I will tell you, I have no problems. I am not a prude. I have no qualms about reading BDSM if it's done right. But that one just churned my stomach. So I go to South Carolina, and my sisters, my cousins, my nieces, they're all buzzing about this 50 Shades.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read it, Mary? Nope, haven't read it. Have you read it, Mary? Nope, haven't read it. Then my
mm-hmm.
son comes to me. He goes, Mom, have you read 50 Shades yet? I said, no. Why should I? He goes, well, I read it because Tara made me. That was his cousin's wife. Tara made me read it. It's not bad. He said, I don't think you'd like it. I said, that's why I haven't read it. He said, well, I've got a copy. And if you want to, you're welcome to take my copy. But just skip to chapter 8 before you start reading, because it's not any good before chapter 8. I said, then it's not very well written. I flipped to chapter 8, and I'm like, I think I should take a nap right about now. Just flipping those pages was hard work. It was the most dull, boring book I've ever read. It was too candid, I think. I don't know what it was. It was just weird. Not candid, but canned. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. Y'all, it was definitely.
Did I put you to sleep? Come on.
Yeah, no, thank you.
It was too formula.
I counted until I got tired of counting the amount of times that the girl character said, oh, my. I said, you've got to be kidding me. That book makes me angry. Don't even get me started. That and Twilight. Don't even get me started. But to read it, and I think what the problem, one of the problems, is very poorly written. And the misogyny and the abuse, it's mental abuse the way he treats her, and that these people were glorifying this author and these stories. Like, this is not the way a normal, healthy relationship like that with the BDSM, it's not how it operates. Infuriated that community because that was not an accurate representation. And it's poorly written. And I get very, very angry when things, someone said I was jealous, and I said, I'm not jealous. I wouldn't be this person if you paid me the amount of money that she got paid for these books. Because how can you sleep at night knowing that you wrote such, it's just horrible. And the Twilight Lady, with the fact that the female character, you might have to edit all this out. Oh, no, we're live. But the female character couldn't live without the guy. And I was like, they did a whole entire book and a movie where she wanted to die, and the only way she could feel okay was when she was close to death because she got a glimpse of him. I'm like, what kind of message is that sending to the young people, to the young girls? So, yeah, no, I don't like it.
Well, I'm not, I guess I am a feminist because I'm feminine and because I understand. But I'm not an activist, zealous feminist. Is that? I think that's what I'm trying to get at. I'm not running around, women, women, women. But I think that women have come too far for other women. I mean, most romance books have been written by men. And Jean, if we're driving you nuts, just go ahead and hang up, buddy. Oh, we got another caller on the line. Let me see who that is. Saved by the Bell. Hi, who just called in from 703 area code?
This is Carl McCullough.
Well, hi, Carl. We bogarted your show. Glad you're here,
I am so sorry I'm late.
It's okay.
Howdy.
Well, Pop, you can hang up then. Thank you for saving my day. Or you can hang out with me and Carl and Jean.
Yeah.
I'm delighted you're here.
Well, I apologize. The extenuating circumstances are more than you want to hear, but I'm here and I'm grateful.
We are too. We are very grateful you're here. So at this point, I'm going to actually formally introduce you to our listeners. And because we were going way off the rails with our conversation, but that's okay. That's what we do. That's unscripted. But Carl McCullough and his wife, Jan, are both natives of Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Now, they have 6 children, 9 grandchildren. Carl's a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy and the Naval Postgraduate School. Needless to say, Carl's lived a pretty stellar adventure in his life with working with the FAA, the White House, the Pentagon. But most recently, Carl has written a book called Sid and the Boys. And I'm going to stop right there and let you take off, Carl, and tell us why you wrote this book.
Okay. Well, I'll add thank you very much for having me on. And
you're
I'll
welcome.
Just add to it that, as you said, the title is Fit and the Boys. The subtitle is Playing Ball in the Face of Race and Big Business. And that part of it came along after I decided to write the story. It's the true story of a high school basketball team in my hometown, which you said is Bartlesville, Oklahoma, in the 1960s. I graduated in 62. The story took place in 66 and 67. And I knew a little bit about the story from my mother and dad telling me back when it happened. But I didn't know the whole story. I learned more when I came across a picture on Facebook of the four surviving starters of that basketball team with their coach. He was my coach, too. His name's Sid Burton. He is the Sid in Sid and the Boys, the title. And he's now 89 years old, and he had been inducted into the Oklahoma High School Hall of Fame. And when I saw that and began to put the story together, starting with what my mother and dad told me back in 1966 and 67, I said, that is a phenomenal story. I need to learn more about it. And I made two trips out to Oklahoma, one last February of 2020, and again in March, just before COVID brought the world to a screaming halt. I began to learn more and more about the story, and said, that really needs to be a book. And we've got a book now.
You put that together pretty fast, too.
Well, I was motivated to do it, in part because of Sid's age. As I said, he's 89 now. The players on that team are in their early 70s. I'm about halfway in between their ages. So time wasn't my ally, my friend. I felt like I needed to get the book done because I wanted it to be a tribute to Sid and the boys. And when I tell you more about the book, I think you'll know why I wanted to pay tribute. It's just an exceptional story. I'm not going to tell you it's an exceptional book. That's for readers to determine. But the story really, in many ways, is more compelling than Hoosiers, which is maybe the most famous underdog basketball story I can think of. This really is more compelling in a lot of ways.
Well, you mentioned that it was basketball in the face of race and big business.
Yes.
What does business have to do with a college, high school, or was it college or high school?
Yeah. It's a high school, but the name of it was College High School because it was built. It was built as a junior college and a high school, became just a high school. But so Bartlesville, Oklahoma, my hometown, was the headquarters for Phillips Petroleum Company, which people may recognize as the company behind the Phillips 66 Shield. It was one of the largest oil companies in the world at the time. The headquarters were in Bartlesville. And not only did that mean big business was there, but Phillips was the sponsor of perhaps the best basketball team, the best organized basketball team on planet Earth in the 1940s and 50s. I didn't realize that at the time because it was the only basketball I knew, but they had 11 national AAU championship teams. They had 39 AAU All-Americans. They had 12 U.S. Olympic basketball players and the head coaches of the U.S. Olympic teams in 1948 and 1956 were Phillips 66ers coaches. So basketball was very big, and basketball was the marketing arm, the principal marketing arm of Phillips Petroleum Company. So they kind of dominated the town, both in a business sense and in basketball, providing inspiration, providing leadership, motivation, coaches, and things like that. So basketball and big business kind of grew up together with big oil in Bartlesville. And it was that confluence of all those influences in 1966 and 67 that turned this into a really interesting story. And that is because Phillips, the leadership of Phillips, took a real interest in sports, and they like to send some of their former basketball players over to the school system, to the junior high schools, as we call them then. Today they're middle schools, but to junior high schools and high schools, and, quote, help out the coaches over there. Well, sometimes that help was welcome. Sometimes it wasn't. I think listeners and readers know that if you put yourself in the position of a teacher or a coach, and in most cases the coaches were teachers, they're responsible not just for coaching the kids basketball or football or tennis or swimming or whatever, but they're responsible for their academic performance, their behavior in the classroom, their behavior after class, away from school, the general development of the kids. And when they get some help from, in this case, big business, you can see why that might rub some people the wrong way.
Yes.
Sometimes cause more problems than it solves, frankly.
So how is Coach Burton these days?
He is alert. He's coaching. He's healthy.
He's still coaching?
I'm not going to use the word. No, he's not. He's totally retired. He left Bartlesville after that season. And I'll tell you in a minute why he did that. But to finish on how he is today, I'd say he's everything except mobile. He doesn't get around much. He doesn't get out. He cares for his son, who is in his 60s, who has, frankly, more health problems, I think, than Coach Burton does. But
wow.
Coach Burton, or Sid, as everybody knew him, is alive and well, and he is ecstatic. He's on cloud nine about the success of this book because he now realizes how important it was, the impact he made on people, the fact that he was almost everybody's favorite American history teacher, and a very successful coach. But he left Bartlesville after that season, and I'll give you just a minute or two on why, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
When I met with him last March 10th, the day before arenas and theaters and airlines and everything else closed down, I met with him in his home in Norman, Oklahoma, with a couple of his players, and he told us this story. He had a mentor, a fellow by the name of Burl Stidham, who was now, at the time, the school system's athletic director, and he got a call from an emissary of Phillips Petroleum Company management, a telephone call, and the message was this: Burl, our boss over here has noticed that you've got this black kid that's back there running back all of the kickoffs, and he thinks you need to tell the coach to put a white kid in every now and then. And Burl heard that. And you don't know Burl like I do, but if you did, you could imagine his response. And it was, that sounds like something you need to tell him yourself. And he was fired.
Oh.
I didn't have all the circumstances when I wrote and published the book. I have since learned from an eyewitness to the school board meeting, the reporter who covered the school board meeting the night they dispensed with him, the whole story, that there was a physical confrontation, there was nastiness, there was the kind of thing that really will make a wonderful screenplay or a good movie. And it's not in the book because I left it to the readers to imagine what happened. But Burl Stidham was fired from his job for resisting the racial direction that Phillips Petroleum was trying to exert there over the school's athletic teams. And Sid heard about that from Burl. He feared that would happen to him, understandably. He was afraid, and I've talked with Sid many times about this, he was afraid somebody would say, Sid, you've got two blacks in your starting lineup. That's one too many. Or Sid, Ernie Jackson, one of your black players, is getting too much playing time. Now, those things never happened, but Sid was afraid they would. And he learned at the end of the season that one of his players wasn't invited to an all-state basketball game because, quote, they had their quota.
Oh,
and,
no.
Yeah. Yeah. So Sid was out of town in a heartbeat when that season was over. He went back to Norman, Oklahoma, to the University of Oklahoma, where he already had a master's degree. He finished up work on his doctorate, and he went back into coaching and coached women's community college basketball for the next 17 years in the Oklahoma City area before he finally retired. So that I've now given you a sense for why I have a subtitle, Playing Ball in the Face of Race and Big Business. Those were the two backstories, neither of which seemed very pretty.
Mm-mm.
And most of it really wasn't known to people in Bartlesville. But the reaction I've had from so many readers who grew up there is, hey, Carl, that's not the town I remember, but it must be the town that was. And I say to them, same here. Amen. It's not the town I remember, but it's the town I discovered once I started writing a book and asking questions about it. And mm-hmm. and I'll just add one other thing, that this has been, it's been an incredible week. Part of the reason I was late tonight has to do with some of these circumstances, but I was in the Washington, D.C. area earlier this week for a funeral, but I had a chance to sit down at, for, over lunch with one of the principal players in this book, one of the surviving starters. I mentioned his name a few minutes ago, Ernie Jackson. Ernie is a black man. He was born in a very poor family. Now, I mentioned Bartlesville, the home of Phillips Petroleum Company, was a very affluent town, high among all the towns and cities in America in terms of PhDs and per capita income and college graduates.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a poor section of town, and three of the 12 players on the team were black, Ernie Jackson among them. Ernie grew up in a home that didn't have running water, indoor plumbing, until he was in the third grade, and he had 11 siblings. Clearly an underprivileged kid. And by the way, across the tracks where Phillips Petroleum Company had their headquarters, there was not a single black office employee anywhere in the company, nor was there ever in the history of their basketball team, the best basketball team on the planet, was there ever a black basketball player. So if that doesn't define and personify systemic racism as we know it today, I don't know what would. That it was so systemic that we didn't even notice it. We the white people who had Phillips privileges, my dad was a Phillips employee. My father-in-law was a Phillips employee. We had tremendous privileges, but we never noticed what was happening across the tracks. And there was Ernie growing up in this home, no running water, no indoor plumbing, no air conditioning. A lot of us didn't have air conditioning, but that's how he grew up. Yet Ernie, he led this basketball team to a state championship, a team that had no starters taller than 6 feet tall. They were 5'11", 5'11", 5'11", 5'11", and 6 feet, won the state championship, and that's the Hoosiers part of it. But Ernie was also an all-state football player. He got a scholarship to the University of Notre Dame. He played 2 years there before he injured his knee and had to give up his athletic career. But Ernie went on to graduate from Notre Dame in 1971 as an honor student, as a Rhodes Scholar finalist, and got a scholarship to Columbia Law School, which, as you know, is perennially one of the top five law schools in America.
Sure.
And Ernie, and so I learned all of this about Ernie. We grew up there in the same hometown, 5 years apart, seven blocks apart, his house to my house. I had not met him until 3 days ago.
Oh, wow.
I had literally hundreds of emails, texts, phone calls, Zoom meetings with Ernie over the past 12 months, had written this book featuring a lot of his life in it, and we finally had lunch in Silver Spring, Maryland, Monday of this week.
Huh.
I cannot begin to tell you how memorable, how emotional that was for me.
Wow, I bet.
That's really cool to meet, to meet someone.
Remarkable human being. He really is remarkable. And just as remarkable was a guy from the other end of the social spectrum, Scott Martin. To this day, I haven't met Scott either. But Scott's dad was the number two guy at Phillips. at the time. In fact, he was kind of suspected as being the guy who was pulling the strings over there with the coaches. It turns out he was not the guy. But he went on to become the chairman and CEO of Phillips a year or two after this story took place. So Scott was from one of the wealthier families in town. He was just as athletic as Ernie. He was an all-state football player. He was the point guard on the basketball team. He was he ended up going to the University of Oklahoma, as his dad had, on a scholarship. He played tennis. He was a conference champion in tennis. He was named best basketball player in America, college basketball player in America, under 6 feet tall in 1972. And he, like Ernie, went on to graduate school on a scholarship, earned his MBA, and was one of the youngest bank presidents in the history of Tulsa by the time he was 30 years old.
Wow.
So both of these guys had incredibly successful lives after high school through college. And they weren't alone. They're just two of the most noteworthy out of this group. But of the 12 players on the basketball team, all of them went to college. 11 of them graduated from college. Two of them became medical doctors. Two of them earned MBAs. And Ernie, as I said, earned a law degree from Columbia. So their achievements on the court were spectacular, winning a state championship in remarkably underdog fashion on a last-second shot by a player off the bench. That's the basketball part of the story. But what they contributed off the court in their lives after high school is equally amazing.
Now, how many people did you feature in there in addition to the coach?
Well, I emphasized the lives really of the five starters.
Uh-huh.
Their names were Pat Sears, who was known as Booty, Ernest Geary, who was known as Moody. So we had Moody and Booty. We had Ernie Jackson, whom I've described. He was called Eagle because he could, quote, jump out of the gym. Scott Martin was called Sports because he was so good at all the sports, tennis, basketball, and football. And the fifth starter was David Peterson, who was referred to as Petey. So the story is really about all five of those guys, kids as I call them, when they grew up, from what their mothers and dads did. Ernie's mother worked as a hotel maid and a personal maid across the tracks, while Scott Martin's dad was running Phillips Petroleum Company. I talked about their backgrounds, about their paper routes, about their neighborhoods, about their families. And there's just a lot of meat to that, a lot of interest because of how unique these kids were and how successful they became in later life. So I emphasized those five, but there were others, of course, that were mentioned. The reserve who scored the winning basket in the state championship game was a guy, Bob Larson, who was called Moose. So if you follow me, we had Moody, Booty, and Moose on the team. Yeah. And Moose Larson was put in the game. Now, they were playing against Oklahoma City Douglas, an undefeated team that had scored over 100 points in a lot of games. And these were high school games, only 32 minutes long with no three-point line. So scoring 100 points, they had to be pretty good. And their starting lineup was 5'11", 6'1", 6'3", 6'5", and 6'7". Huge team compared to the Bartlesville boys, who were essentially all 5'11". So Oklahoma City Douglas was favored heavily to win the game. But it was a very close game, and I give it away here, but even the people who knew the story found it suspenseful in the book. They knew how it was going to end, but they got a chance to relive it. Sid Burton put Moose Larson in as a substitute near the end of the game because he was a scrappy defender. He wanted defense in there. And with 3 seconds left on the clock and the game tied, Moose found himself with the ball. Everybody else was covered or double covered. He had nothing to do except shoot. He had shot 4 times in the tournament before that and had not even come near making a basket. He gets the ball with 3 seconds left, puts it up, makes a basket, and Bartlesville wins 74-72. And that's
wow.
That's why I say this has Hoosiers written all over it. And then by the time you crank in all of the racial drama, all of the Phillips Petroleum Company drama with, I'll give you just a little bit more on that in a second, but by the time you crank all of that in, it's a very compelling story. Now, just to tell you specifically the Phillips role with regard to this basketball team, the players were at a practice before the season started, a preseason practice, and a couple of them noticed a Phillips player, a Phillips 66 former AAU All-American, a guy by the name of Denny Price. Denny Price was not a villain in this book at all. In fact, he was a wonderful human being. Basketball fans will know his family well because he had three sons, two of whom played in the NBA, Mark and Brent Price. Mark Price was an all-pro basketball player, still holds a number of NBA records. But all of these Price family members were about 6 feet tall also. They weren't big. They didn't stand out in the crowd. They were 5'11 or 6 feet tall. And Denny Price showed up at practice one day. And two of the players, Booty and Moose, saw him. They knew who he was, and they thought, uh-uh, not on my watch. This isn't going to happen. And he was in and out of practice fairly quickly, not long enough to do anything or make himself known to anybody else. But those guys got together with their fathers and said, we have to do something about this. They felt like Phillips meddling in their coaching ranks had wreaked havoc on their football team in the season that had just been completed. Now here he shows up at basketball practice, and he's a good guy, but they loved Sid Burton. By the way, Sid was everybody's favorite American history teacher too.
Oh.
But a wonderful coach, as you can tell by his results. And the players revolted. And together with their fathers, providing a little bit of adult leadership, supervision, de-emotionalizing the situation, they wrote a letter to the school board, to the principal, to the athletic director of the school system, and said, essentially, if you want College High School to have a basketball team this year, you need to tell Phillips to cease and desist. Stop what they're doing. We don't want any stinking help, was essentially the tone of the message. So the athletic director got the message, the letter. Quick, it was hand-carried to his office. The same day, he came over and met with the players before practice. He said, what's going on? He had no idea what this was about, and they explained it to him. And apparently, they got pretty emotional then. Their fathers had helped them make the letter sort of unemotional, just, you know, because they didn't want him to throw it away, dismiss it. But when the athletic director came over and had a meeting with the players, they said, we're not kidding. You've got to stop this stuff. We've had enough of it. And the amazing thing was, Sid Burton, the coach, didn't know about that episode.
Oh.
Equally amazing. I mean, he got a copy of the letter, but he didn't know what they were objecting to because he had not seen Denny Price at practice. But by the same token, the players didn't know why Sid left Bartlesville after the season. They didn't know about that racial incident. They didn't know that Burl Stidham had been fired over refusing to carry out racial instructions from Phillips. So it took a meeting at Sid's house in Norman, Oklahoma, March 10th of last year. I was there. Three of the players were there. And we listened to Sid tell his story, and he listened to them tell their story. And I walked out of there as one of the few people in the world that knew the whole story. And that became the book. There you go.
Well, I want to know where we can buy this book.
You can get it almost anywhere, at any major online outlet. Through the easiest way is my website, which is sidandtheboys.com. That's just all one word, SidAndTheBoys.com. But there are links on there to Amazon, to Goodreads, to Barnes & Noble, to Books A Million. If people have other favorite retailers, they can try those. But the book is available in both paperback and ebook in all of those outlets. And by the way, it debuted on Amazon as the number one best-selling new release in both basketball and sociology of sports, which was pretty
Congratulations.
Cool.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's excellent.
Well, you know, things like that don't last forever, but when I saw my book ranked ahead of John Grisham's new book on basketball, I took a screenshot of that, and you can never take that away from me.
That is right. Now, he wrote a book about basketball, too?
He did. It's called Souley, I think, S-O-O-L-E-Y. There I am plugging my competition's book, like John Grisham needs my help.
What timing.
But, yeah, I was just so amazed, and it continues to do very well.
I'm very proud to know you, Carl. That's very cool.
What an important
thank
story.
You so much.
I'm so glad you were able to tell the story.
Oh, yes.
Well, I am too. And I said to you what the common reaction is. People have now discovered things about their hometown that they didn't know. But more importantly, I don't know. I don't pretend to know which is more important. They have relived the joy of that basketball season. People that weren't there are living the joy of that basketball season for the first time. But they're also learning a lot about life that we didn't recognize. This, by the way, this week is the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Race Massacre. And I don't know how many people are really familiar with that. It was one of those things that didn't make a lot of news. I grew up 45 miles away from Tulsa, and it wasn't in our Oklahoma history books. But this was a massacre in an area of Tulsa called Greenwood, which was referred to as Black Wall Street or Little Wall Street. It was a very affluent part of Tulsa, but it's estimated that up to 300 people were massacred in a riot that took place in May of 1921. And so things like that are beginning to come out. There's also a movie. There's a movie being made right now I'm not enough of a movie guy to know if I've got all the pronunciation right, but Martin Scorsese, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's doing a movie starring Robert De Niro and other big names, and he's filming it near Bartlesville on the Osage Indian Reservation. It's called The Killers of the Flower Moon.
Ooh.
It's an epic movie that'll be released next year, but it's about the systemic murders of Osage Indians or Native Americans in the 1920s in a case that really put J. Edgar Hoover on the map. People were killing these folks over Indian rights and money issues, and that story was not well known in my hometown or in the state of Oklahoma either. It never made Oklahoma history books. So when I wrote this book, it didn't start out to be a story about race. It started out to be a story about basketball. And the other elements came into it. And people like Ernie Jackson said, Carl, this shouldn't surprise you. This is what I grew up on. Keep writing about what really happened in Bartlesville. So I did, and nobody's arguing with the facts. I think people pinch themselves and say, how could that have happened and we never noticed it? But I didn't try to lecture anybody in the book. As I said, I didn't know these things were going on. I'm not about to pretend that this is something all of us should have known or done something about. I just want people to read the book, understand what was happening, learn a little bit from it, and then talk about it. And I think that's what's happening.
I think it's good. I think it's a controversial topic, but you didn't handle it in a controversial way.
I'd like to think that too. I certainly tried not to. I tried to just stick to the facts and let readers make their own decisions. And still frame it within this really good news story. Deep in my heart, I really think this ought to be and may become a movie. And if so, it will be the kind. If so, it's the kind that people will stand up at the end in a theater and cheer. Because little prevails over big, and good prevails over bad. And you can't ask for a lot more than that.
No. Well, I can ask. I hate to do this, but we're about out of time, and this show will shut us off. So I want to ask you for two things, Carl. Give us your website again. Is number one.
SidandTheBoys.com.
Easy enough.
Yeah. Sid and the
and,
Boys.
And anybody who's listening can find. I'll put that on the description to the show. But the other thing that I wanted to ask you to do is give us some parting words. Gene and I always like to end our show with nice things for people to take away. And mine is very simple. Whatever you do, wherever you go, whatever you can always be kind. And
yeah,
Gene?
Mine's awful simple. I just believe that whatever you're doing, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right.
I love both of those. And Gene, I got to tell you, because I think maybe you mentioned it at the beginning, but I spent a long time in the Navy, 24 years as a naval aviator, 28 total years in the Navy, and that was sort of our mantra: if you're not having it fun, you're not doing it right. But as much as anything, I really just believe in the golden rule. And you can say it any way you want, but basically it means treat other people like you want to be treated.
Yes,
indeed.
Very nice.
Well, with that, I have to say good night, and I bid you best of luck with your book.
And thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm delighted you joined us tonight. I really am. Otherwise,
well,
we have
welcome.
To reschedule you in January.
Yes.
No, I apologize. I'll explain offline what happened, but thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh,
wonderful,
you're very welcome.
Bye.
Thank you.
All
right. Bye-bye.
You bet. Best wishes. Thank you.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners and that our website and magazine receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's BUNEKE.org.